How's your Proverbs reading going? Excitement abounds. Yes. I found it really challenging. Really, really challenging. I mean, the message is good, and as Sarah said, there's some nuggets of real truth in there. Some of my favourite verses are from Proverbs. But to read it through, which is what I did, beginning to end, a variety of translations, really hard going. Really very difficult. Because it's not got the rhythm or the poetry of Psalms. It's not a narrative like the Gospels are. It's not like a sort of a history book like you'd find in the Old Testament or with the prophets. It's hard going because it jumps all over the place. You know, you have a verse talking about one thing here and then all of a sudden the next verse talks about something completely. It's like these random thoughts are being put down. And maybe that's what Solomon did. I don't know. But all these topics jump all over the place. So it's been a real challenge. I was excited, however, to find when I was reading through chapter 22, which is the chapter previous to what Isaac read us, that there was one verse that said, his 30 verses, 30 wise sayings in summary. Oh, hallelujah, summary of what's being said. And what was read to us is just 6 of those wise sayings. So no, we're not going to go through the other lot as well. But they were just presented as 6 that dealt with families, because that's what we're talking about. Strong families. How do you forge a strong family in day and age today? Well, technically, the word forge means to mould or shape by heating in a furnace of fire and hammering. We don't want a hammer. The families. However, as in Solomon's day, so today, our families are being hammered, right, left and centre. That's the reality. So we've got to have a look at what Proverbs is saying about that. So first of all, let's have a look at some of the things he says to young people. Not necessarily children, but young people. Proverbs 1:8-9. Listen, my son, to your father's instruction and do not forsake your mother's teaching. They will be a garland to grace your head and a chain to adorn your neck. Well, Proverbs 6:20-22. Keep your father's command. Do not forsake your mother's teaching. Bind them upon your heart forever. Fasten them around your neck. When you walk, they will guide you. When you sleep, they will watch over you. When you awake, they will speak to you. The commands and the teaching of the parents are described as significant additions to everyday life. Now, if you went and asked a teenager, what would they say about that? Significant additions? Actually, the message describes some of those verses as like flowers in your hair or rings on your fingers, or wrap yourself in their teaching from head to foot and wear them like a scarf around your neck. Normally, you get the eye roll. Don't you, she's talking again. All right? They're not seen as they were being presented. But what they're being presented as is what we've seen during the week, what we will see tomorrow. On the royal family, the members of the royal family, they have medals that represent something. They don't get up in the morning and say, oh, I like the look of that one. That goes with my jacket. I'll wear that one. The medals represent something. The jewellery that the women are wearing, most of them have a significance for what is happening. So what Proverbs is saying is the teaching of mother and father is to be seen not just as a fashion accessory, because that would never happen, but something that has significance to the life of the young person. You may remember that Jane would have mentioned last week that just now she's beginning to understand some of the things and the reasons for the rules and the disciplines that were given to her as a young child, which she didn't like. She didn't like it. And sometimes those of us who have been around long enough have grandchildren find that when the children are little and they come and stay with you or come and visit, they are very much into what mum and dad said, like, I mean little. So you get told, mummy doesn't do it like that. And you go, yeah, okay. And then you've got to decide whether to do it the way mummy did it or the way you do it. But it's very important to them to have that security about the teaching they've got at home. Then you hit teenagers and, oh, my goodness, they don't want to know. And then as you get older, like Jane said, you begin to see. You find that they begin to understand. It's also interesting to note in those verses that I just read to you, both mother and father are mentioned. And in a culture that we quite often assume was very male-dominated, both are important. It's a partnership. It's a partnership. It's seen as a teamwork. And the greater security between the parents, the greater security children will have in their relationships with each other, with their parents, with their own mental health, with God, and with their interactions with the community. It flows through because of what they see. Because parents model, and this is a scary bit, parents model how to process anger, sadness, frustration, and fear, how to treat people they love, and how to treat people that maybe they're not particularly fond of. That's a challenge, isn't it? It's a challenge. So the foundation of the family being presented through Proverbs is being able to see the actions of the father and the mother. What's being modelled? What are they seeing? And in our present world, with such a variety of different family units, the structure of different family units, as a church family, we also need to be modelling those same things. Mutual commitment, individual wholeness, and relational growth. Big words. How we treat one another is what it's saying. Because young people are also watching the way we treat each other as well. So what are you modelling? What are you modelling? Now also for parents, what does Proverbs say? You want a summary for what it says for children? That's easy. I got a nice one with alliteration that you will like. Look, listen and learn. That's for the kids. What does it say to parents? Provide, protect and prepare. Prepare them for what they are going to face. Provide a secure place for them, a refuge. Protect them from dangers. Proverbs 14:26. He who fears the Lord has a secure fortress, and for his children it will be a refuge. And from the message, fear of God builds up confidence and makes the world safer for your children. This is aimed straight at the parent. Fear of God, meaning to acknowledge the purity and holiness of God, to have the proper reverence for God, proper awe for God, to be aware of his almighty love and power. That's got to be seen at home. It's got to be seen at home. It's not just something you do on Sunday. That's got to be seen at home within the family unit. And we're not talking just a certain age group here. We're talking right across the board. In the for our study book, for our life groups, the Warren Wiersbe book on Proverbs, it says this: the world wants to penetrate that fortress of our families and kidnap our children and grandchildren. But godly parents keep the walls strong. The world wants to kidnap our children. And when I looked up the front of that book, I found out that the first edition was printed in 2010. And it would have been a pretty good warning then. But in the decade that's gone by, the fortress has pretty well been breached. Because the world's pretty much in the home through iPhones, internet, many devices. How do you keep that out? Yeah, there's ways, but it's difficult, isn't it? It's not so easy to keep the world out there. What happens on television? It's not as easy. So why children need a refuge? Sometimes they need a refuge from us, I think. Children move out into the world, or the world invades the family. They're going to be attacked, insulted, criticised, and undermined from every different direction you can fit. That's the reality. Right? That's the reality. So home needs to be a safe place. And the church needs to be a safe place as well. They need to know that they can be themselves. They can be comfortable here. That it's okay. They're not going to be criticised and attacked from every different direction. Because otherwise, what's the point? Many years ago, I remember on a picnic with my family, we were at a call and we're having visitors from a very high-ranking officer. So I was on my best behaviour and got all the food and everything prepared and everything was going well. And the kids were fairly little and we took them for a picnic lunch barbecue. Barbecue was being done brilliantly. I was getting everything ready. And one of my children was choosing to behave with as much mischief as he could possibly muster. And no matter how quietly and strongly I suggested he stop, he didn't. And at one point I just sat down in complete exasperation, and whatever. And the lovely, kind gentleman who I've known for a long time looked at me and laughed and said, "Anne, but he knows he's loved. He feels free to be himself because he knows he's loved." And I have remembered that for quite a long time as the grandchildren came along, because there needs to be a feeling of security to enable people to be themselves. And that, I find, is a real challenge for us as a church family. They need to know they're loved. We need each other to know we're loved. It's okay to be me. It's okay. And that's a real challenge. I find that that's a real challenge. So other verses from Proverbs 23, which Isaac read. Very bold to have to read these, Isaac. "Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish them with the rod, they will not die. Punish them with the rod and save them from death." And from Proverbs 13, "He who spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is careful to discipline him." Yay, I was excited to find out I had to talk about those verses. It's one of the most controversial parenting topics. And as we know, there are some countries completely prohibited corporal punishment. In Australia, smacking is permitted, but there are rules. You can only do it a certain way. Now, this is in no way talking about child abuse or bashing or hammering. It's in no way. It's talking about disciplining. And it's speaking, these verses, they're speaking about the discipline that was acceptable in the culture of the day. But what was it actually saying? Why? Why would that happen? All right, put your hand up. No cameras are around. Curtains are pulled across. Put your hand up if you ever use a wooden spoon. Don't look around. Do you use it as a warning? Yeah, it was. I think I probably did a couple of times. Scariest part was always in the drawer, mainly used for cooking, but, you know. I went and bought out and I came home with my shopping and unpacked my shopping, and I had purchased, without realising the full impact, a set of three. I have three children, those of you who don't know. And as I was unpacking them, they were unpacked and went, "Oh, what's this?" And I looked and laughed and said, "Well, I wonder." And they were various sizes. And to this day, those of you who know my family, I do not know where the little one went. Was taken and hidden. So it's like discipline is very necessary. But in today's world, what does that mean? What does that actually mean? How do we discipline? It's about the fact that love and limits are required in order to provide the safety we're talking about for our children. So if they're allowed to grow up without limits and boundaries and consequences and responsibilities and accountability and all that stuff, we're not preparing them for anything. We're guaranteeing them a life of heartache and disaster. So you've got to find the appropriate ways for the culture we are in. So there's such thing as curfews. I'm assuming they're still relevant. Timeouts. Naughty chair. Yeah, I never had naughty chair, but apparently they were a thing. Or limits on device use and being grounded. Did you have the being grounded? Did you have to ground your... Yeah, I've got Joyce's not in the head. All right. So she remembers that. But it also has to be relevant to the personality of the child, because for some children, sending them to their room would be the best thing ever. They'd love it. So that's not a discipline. So you have to find the best way. My father, I can remember, had this dreadful habit, but he did own up towards the end. I would say, I want to go out for supper after Sunday night meeting. Can I go out for supper? And he'd look at me and he'd go, no. You let me go last week and I'll go, no. You're tired. No, I'm not. Yes, you're tired. You've had... What I did find out later was I have a scar on my forehead from where I bashed my head on a brick, as you do when you're two, and split it open. And what would happen was when I was really tired, it would go white. So when I would ask if I could go out, he would look at me and look at the scar. And that's how he would decide. Now, he told me that later on, which I thought was really, that was nasty. But because he knew what was happening for me, he could give the appropriate decision. So we have to know the young folk. We have to know our children. We have to know what's relevant. And when Sarah was talking earlier about praying for our young folk, we need to know what's right, because they're not all the same. And some of them will discuss some issues and some of them will discuss other, but they're not all the same anywhere, any more than our own children were not all the same. So, but we get fixated on this word rod. We can understand that there's need to discipline, there's different forms of discipline, but these verses say with the rod, that's dreadful. Okay. The word rod that's mentioned there in the scripture is exactly the same word that is mentioned in Psalm 23. Verse 4, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. So how can we be scared of something that's going to comfort me? So this was written by David, Solomon's father, because David would know as a shepherd, they were the tools. They were the tools that he used. So the rod and the staff were the tools which gave comfort, which gave protection. Protection from dangers that were coming in. As a young shepherd, he would have used, and there's stories in the Old Testament where he actually used the rod to kill, I think it was a bear and a lion that came to attack his flock. So it was a very important tool. It provided security. The rod provided security. Same word. So that the discipline we're talking about teaching is about providing security. That's the same for all of us. So we're talking about parents providing protection, preparation for life, making them aware of dangers, consequences of actions, and the list goes on. So much of parenting, as you all know, is about balance. The dreaded B word that my children, if they were here, would say, oh, there she goes again. That's her word. Balance between love and limits, encouragement and challenge, counselling and listening. Here's a biggie. Between intervening and withdrawing. Sometimes it's better not to say. That's hard. No such thing as a perfect family. Families are hard work and cause a lot of heartache. And particularly in our rapidly changing world with shifting values and of society, and they all impact our families, our next generations. So what do we do when the world does what was said in that Warren Wiersbe book, kidnap our children and our grandchildren? What do we do when the lure of the dangers becomes too great and the world gets into our what we thought was our fortress? What do we do? The Proverbs deals with the dangers that were present in those days. It talks about the eating and the drinking and the mixing with the wrong sort of people. They were still problems then. And it talks about that. What do we do in this day and age? Let's go forward a bit. And in the parable of the prodigal son, Jesus presents to us an imperfect family. An imperfect family. In a situation where both sons cause pain to the father. Both sons cause heartache in different ways. One by his actions because he leaves and goes, and the other who stays, but his attitudes are dreadful. So it's an imperfect family. Ah, some of us can relate to that. An imperfect family. And Luke 15:20, which is Luke 15, is where you'll find the prodigal son, has this verse. While he was still a long way off, while the prodigal son was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. Now we know that in that parable, the father represents God who is waiting for prodigals to return to him. But when I looked at this verse, I saw a couple of words that really stood out to me. While he was still a long way off. Both of those sons in the story of the prodigal sons were a long way off. One by distance, one by attitude. Now we all know, I'm prepared to say, we all know in this building right here today, someone either in our immediate family, our extended family, or family of friends whose heart is aching because of someone who is a long way off. And what do? The heartache can be so immense that it starts to affect us. And what do? We know we can come to God with it, but there just seems to be something we feel we want to do. But what happens? Because we can see the danger that some of these people are in. And sometimes they're oblivious to it. And even if we talk to them, we get the rolling eyes or the equivalent thereof. And so the helplessness we feel about that can be quite overwhelming. About a decade ago or so, I was introduced to books by someone called Barbara Johnson, and some of you ladies may have read her books. It was at a time when I was entering the parenting of teenagers. That was fun. And my father was in Melbourne dying of cancer, so there were family ramifications there. It was at a core with a lot of demands from people. And it was getting pretty overwhelming. Like every day. And reading this book of Barbara Johnson's, she's a conference speaker, Christian humorist, she describes herself. She published a drawing in a book, and it was presented to her by someone who knew of the problems she was going through. She was experiencing family problems of her own, which were quite intense. And this is what this person presented to her. This is a picture, and it's a dated drawing, as you will see. And what she said was, here's a picture of a long staircase. What I want you to do, spiritual exercise, so imagination's got to play in this, is to get a very large box and decorate it beautifully, because then I want you to take that person that is providing that heartache and place them in the box, put the lid on, gently. And then walk up that staircase and place them at the feet of Jesus, because that's the staircase to the throne of God for this picture, purpose of this picture. You're taking that person who's causing that heartache that you feel so helpless to help, and you're placing them at the feet of Jesus. Just place it there and step back. Step back a few steps and watch as he opens the box and takes that person out. Now, on the drawing's obviously a small baby type, but we're not thinking that. For our purposes today, we're thinking of the person who's on our hearts right at the moment, our own family member or extended family or brother, sister, sibling, whatever. And you walk back and you see Jesus take their hand and talk to them and greet them and realise how much he loves them. Because one of the biggest problems for us is we forget that God loves our family member, our precious family members, more than we do, because we don't think anybody could possibly love them more than we do. But he does, so that we can actually put them in his care and feel confident that he will care for them. We're not putting them aside. We're not casting them aside. We're putting them in the best possible care. If we have a health problem, we go to the GP. GP sends us to a specialist, and that's the person who's going to fix us. If we don't go to the specialist, guess what? Not going to get any better. In this family situation with people who are causing us such grief, God's the specialist. But we've got to hand it over. We've got to hand it over. And then as we walk back down the stairs, we hear Jesus saying, "No one will ever take this precious one out of my hands, and I will never let them go." We hear that. We hear the confirmation. And as we continue walking down the stairs, we thank God for taking control of the situation of that person. And then we hear ourselves praying, "Lord, that settles it. I have given you that person, name them, and have taken my hands off." Taken my hands off. Do your work in his or her life as you see fit. As you see fit, not according to the instructions that I wanted to put in the box with them to say, "Here, God, here's this person. Now I think you need to do this, 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 and this. I think it needs to be done like this. I think this is the path they should be going down." So whether it's a person, whether it's a family, whether it's our core family, you want to put in the box, you have to be prepared to take it up and leave it there and take your hands off. That doesn't mean you love any less or you care for any less, but you don't carry the hurt because, for want of a better term, they're God's problem. He's got it. He's got it. Now, that person that's on your mind right now, or that family that's on your mind, or that situation that's on your mind, I want to give you the opportunity of doing something about that. Now, we don't have to rush this, and it does mean you may have to move a bit. But what I want you to do, we're going to do a slight change on that drawing, because out here are these gold boxes, and these gold boxes represent, for our purposes today, the throne of God that we're going to put our concerns into. We're going to take it home because the world is coming into our home. The world is invading our families. And I think we need to remind ourselves that we can take the throne of God into our home. And that's what we're going to be doing. So I'm going to invite you in a moment, as Gabe prays for us, to come and take a box, take one or two. And there was a huge response from our 9:30 because people were aware of situations. they were aware, and someone came up with a wonderful idea and said, have you got a flat pack? An IKEA person. So I've got some that aren't folded, because what they wanted this for was to put in their Bible. What a great idea. So yes, I do. There's some of those down there as well. But we need to have some way of just... I actually had this on my desk during the week to make sure I'd put it together right. And twice there were family situations. And I went and actually stood there and stopped what I was doing. Stood there and thought about the person and the situation. Said, well, right. Unclipped it. Clipped it over. God, I'm taking my hands off. Here's the situation. You know how much I love that person. You know how precious that person or that situation is to me. But you can do so much more for them. Because we forget, but God knows. God knows your name. God knows your every thought. He sees the tears you cry and hears you when you call. Beautiful words. And he does that for you, and he does that for that precious person you're thinking of. So Gabe's going to play that tune for us. We're going to see the words and pray them. But I invite you to come and take one or two or some of these precious boxes to help you carry those people who are precious to you by handing them over to the one who's got all the power and all the glory to be able to make them into who he wants them to be.